4.3, I think. So the next question is what, how to formulate it for the DSS architecture, right?
Yeah, so I did get a bunch of questions from Osra to asking me to fix certain things in the...
Okay.
So yeah. I need to work on those too.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think I don't think any...
You need that involves me?
Yeah, because you already sent in your current and pending and all that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't have any questions about that. Yeah. So... Okay, so here... I think the key parts of the proposal that need work are section 3, which I'm hoping to make progress on today and maybe tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Section 4, there are some reminders there that we need to address. Section 5 is easy. Shouldn't take more than an hour. And then broader impact is also straightforward. So I would need this result from prior NSS support from you.
Oh.
For the section 7. The last section.
Okay. Yeah.
Looking okay. I think we have less than 3 days.
Yeah.
Just about 3 days. So did you get a chance to read any of the section 4 yet? Or
yes.
Is it?
Yeah, it looks quite.
It seems to make sense.
Yeah. I did some editing there, but yeah.
So there are still some parts that I need to expand, but yeah, and there is a figure that I need to draw as well.
So there, the dedicated server that you're talking about, you probably don't want it to be just one server. You probably want it to be a set of servers, and that would relieve some of the stress.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I think I need a statement there saying that there are ways to do server state replication and have multiple or distribution of the namespace across multiple metadata servers and things like that. But that's sort of,
No, I mean, more than that, you can just say that
which dedicated server are you talking about?
So in the DFS, you are saying, somewhere you say that
in some sense I want to convert the DFS architecture to the other one.
Right, exactly.
Right, so we can make it more energy proportional.
Right. So what you were saying was that, let's say you have three copies that are necessary, these three partitions. Now you're saying that if you take any particular volume, it will stay within this set of servers.
Yeah, and it will be exclusive for that. These servers will be exclusive for that volume.
Yeah, I was trying to argue that it doesn't have to be exclusive. I mean, now what you can do roughly is that, for instance, it doesn't hurt to have some overlap here. There's nothing sacred about making it exclusive.
So the nice thing about these exclusive...
If you make it exclusive, it'll just be one server here, then you run into this problem with the parallelism. Right?
So here, actually... So I call it partitioned volume placement, right?
Yeah.
But then later on...
partition it this way, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, I sort of view it in a different I mean, maybe we are talking about the same thing here, but I just like to picture it slightly differently.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So let's say that all of these are my servers, right? These are all servers. Actually, first of all, I convert these servers into groups. So each group stores exactly one volume. Okay, so let's say that these are groups.
Right.
Okay, and let's say I have volumes V1 through Vn, right? For each volume, I have three replicas. So V11, V12, and V13. So I have that for each of these volumes. So what I'm saying is that I store V11 here, V12 here, and V13 here. So in some sense, and these groups of servers store only these chunks from these volumes, right? So this is V21,
V22. Now you're referring to working set chunks, right?
No. I'm talking about the original data. The original data. So this is
okay,
the
initial like, application. Yeah. Okay. So that's the same as the
maybe
vertical column.
Maybe it's the same as this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now the thing is that we mapped the distributed architecture into this architecture in some sense. Except that instead of having one such guy, I have three copies of each of these. Right?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
So I could partition a chunk of the space on each of these volumes to store working sets from other volumes, which is the flexibility that we have with this model. We are moving the same flexibility to the other model.
Yeah.
So now I have the opportunity to store working set of V2 in this guy, right?
Yeah, so roughly I think it will turn out to be the same because these are the banks A, B, and C, I think the way you call them banks in your writing.
I think that's your terminology.
Sure. Right? Yeah. So you can just call this bank A, bank B, and bank C.
Yeah.
So you're essentially picking one client from this set.
Yeah, but the
one
thing is that the servers for a single volume are dedicated, so there's no intermingling. And then the problem with
I thought that you're going to get hurt with your parallelism.
Yeah, so I do say that. So I say that the drawback of this approach is the IO ops available to single volume is limited to those servers.
Yeah.
Right. So if in the previous case, when it was completely random placement,
yeah.
If you had one volume that had like really high IOPS and all the other volumes that did not have any IOPS,
yeah.
In fact, I could use all the disks in my data center because a single volume's chunks are distributed everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's the drawback that this one
is for
has.
The primary copy. If for the primary copy, I don't have a problem with what you're saying. So you're saying now this is sort of the original, not the working set, this is just the whole...
Just the original. We are not talking about working
that's
set.
Fine. Then that's basically the old idea now.
But the problem, like I said, is that because we have restricted the volumes to specific servers and not all the servers,
exactly.
We have much lower IOPS.
It's not Microsoft's version, but it's a little bit different.
It's
just like the data industry.
Well,
so you're not dividing by chunks, you're dividing by volumes. That's your point.
Yeah.
So there the unit of placement
was
a chunk. Here it's a volume.
Yeah. I mean, we are doing random chunk placement across the servers for a single volume within those servers. So we're still doing, splitting volume in chunks. We're still doing that.
Right. But it'll all be
within a single set of servers.
Single server, actually, really.
No, single set of servers, because one volume may not fit on one server.
Exactly. All right, got it.
Right?
Okay.
Because each server actually here has
a
very small amount of capacity.
Is it right to call it one client, then? What is a client? Is that a set of servers or not? A client can't be a server. All right, yes.
No, here we, so what do I call this here? I call them a group of servers. I call it a group of servers, so I partition.
Because until now you've been using client terms, and now suddenly you're using servers. I'm quite confused.
Oh, I see. I was using clients. Yeah. So yeah. In this,
you've been using C's over there. They were all clients, right?
That's true. Yeah. So in this case, in the reason it's confusing is because in the DFS architecture, a server is also a client.
Yeah. Okay.
Because server stores data. that can be accessed by other guys.
Sure.
But at the same time, it can access data from other guys as well. So
yeah. So maybe we should just keep the, not use the client or server terminology, then use something else.
Maybe use a node or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
That might be a
safer thing to do.
Yeah. Well, here, I mean, there's a little bit more detail in terms of terminology which Google uses, but anyway, we can resolve that later on.
Yeah.
But what I am saying is that
okay.
even if we do this, there is a problem.
Hmm.
And the problem is the following, is that you're restricting a volume to be placed in a small set of servers
correct.
Rather than the entire data center.
Correct. That I understand. Yeah.
So if that volume has a really high IOPS,
then the volume
then,
will be
then that volume
small.
Will be loaded. It may not be able to support that IOPS intensity.
Uh-huh.
So this architecture in some sense is inferior in terms of load balancing to the original architecture where I allowed chunks to be placed anywhere.
Got it. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But we are saying that this helps energy proportionality.
So my point was that if you vary the size of the set, then you essentially get a balance between
that's right.
your load and your...
That's right. So
in fact, that's why I removed that phrase where you said exclusively for this volume.
Right. So, no, actually, when I say that exclusively, I just wanted to convey the idea. And then later on,
yeah,
I say that this might be an acceptable compromise in several settings, right? But maybe it's not a good compromise all the time, right? So an alternative replication strategy is to reduce the level of, is to create fewer partitions where chunks from volumes within the same group can be co-located in the same chunk server. So now what I'm saying is that group volumes, you know, few volumes together, and then use all of their space to store the chunks.
Right.
So in some sense, merge the boundaries across different volumes.
Okay. So it's just a different formulation of the picture I had in my head. That's fine. Okay.
Yeah. So that's why I initially came up with a simple
yeah.
and said, okay, this is a problem because it's not well
right.
load balanced and
so,
therefore.
So I think the picture I had in mind was, so if you just say these are sort of dedicated,
yeah.
Then one will always go here, two will always go here, three will always go here, and so on. And so then you face this problem of this becoming a bottleneck.
Right.
Now, instead, if I say this is one,
this is a group.
This is two. So let's say, hypothetically, I say this is two, this is three, this is four. Now I have two options to
yeah.
place something.
So I was
so
looking at it slightly differently. I was
right.
saying that, well, you could group this,
group
but there could be no
two.
Overlap.
Yeah, yeah.
The other group should be
fine. So
distinct.
That's fine.
Because if you allow overlap, then I think the formulation becomes more complex.
Probably. Sure. It will get more complex, yeah. But we want to, I mean, it's probably better to make the problem statement as general as possible.
Mm.
And then we can say, no, we don't allow these to overlap, these sets to overlap.
Mm.
And that could be our choice
mm.
for implementing it.
Yeah. I agree. That might be a good idea.
But then, I mean, to some extent, I have to decide how many of these decisions to delay for the problem formulation. So maybe there are two. There are two demands here, right? One is this load balancing
mm-hmm.
of some sort, and the
yes.
other is, what is that called?
Energy proportionality?
You want one particular volume to be in a small set of servers so that you can shut them down.
Correct.
So
yeah, I mean, it would be nice to
small
come up
footprint
with
or something like that, right?
Yeah, footprint. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right.
So load balancing requires large footprints.
Mm.
That's
exactly right. Yeah.
And
now that's well put.
So then one could formulate trade-offs between these two, and you can, you know, maybe the user can decide.
Yeah, in this case,
where,
it would be the administrator. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The data center designer or whatever
mm-hmm.
can decide.
Yeah.
Or maybe that can be changed on the fly, because anyway, you can't, it's too expensive to change it on the fly, I guess, because you're here, you're not talking about working set, you're talking about the original data.
Correct. Yeah.
The same considerations probably show up with the working set, but less so, perhaps. Because even in the working set, really the load balancing issues are the same, because anyway, the only things you access are the working set issues.
Yeah.
But the, and you do want a small footprint so that you can shut down.
Yes. You want the working set to be co-located in a smaller set of servers so you
right.
can...
So the same issues are there too. So really you're having it at two levels. Mm. You can you're allowed to make independent decisions on those two. So
mm-hmm.
that makes it pretty complicated.
Yeah. Yeah, but we could make some, we could say, okay, we're going to explore this and this and this. We don't need to come up with all the answers.
So my point was that for the full data set,
hmm.
it's completely okay to not have a small footprint.
I see.
Okay, because anyway, you have three copies.
Hmm.
Anyway, most of the time you're accessing working set.
Hmm.
So who cares if let's say a lot of the machines are shut down.
The problem is there may be some volumes that have characteristics that are not conducive to working set replication, because if they have too large a working set, then the only solution for those guys is to keep them active.
Yeah, but then because of its size, you won't replicate it so much.
We won't replicate it so much, but at the same time, if it spans the entire...
And if you're not going to replicate it so much, if there's only one copy, you're going to keep it active. So the algorithm will sort of automatically kick in and say, yeah, you have to keep this active.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that if the working set is as maybe almost close to the...
Entire set.
To the entire set. In that case, I mean, it's sort of unusual... Certainly.
Yeah.
So we could make some assumptions that such situations will not arise.
Yeah, in such cases, you can say that, then we won't be using the working set space. We'll just use the original data space.
But if that is spread across the entire data center, because in random placement, your chunks can be all over the place.
But that's why, remember, these three banks are going to come ineffective because...
I see. So...
Because, whatever you do... There is an entire copy here, entire copy here, and an entire copy here. And this way, I think that the banks really work in the sense that you can definitely close down. At least you have these clear gears of 0, 1, 2, and 3.
So the question then is, if you have one volume that doesn't have a small working set, which means it's really large working set, but also high IOPS, which means... You need those multiple copies to exist.
Yes.
Then, in that case, you need to maybe keep all the copies active, or
no?
Maybe not.
Then you will focus on the working set, and then you will try and do a small footprint within each bank, and work over there. So that's why I think it's kind of useful to think about this gear business, right? So let's assume. So by the way, why do you have three? What was the original motivation for three copies? Is it just for fault tolerance type thing?
It's mainly for fault tolerance.
Fine.
Yeah.
So this fault tolerance idea imposes these gears of 0, 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
And let's say we take 3, or we can go all the way up to G.
Mm-hmm.
Is it G or... I forgot. I guess he uses another... R or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if let's say that you're down to gear 1. Gear 0 doesn't make sense anymore. So let's say you're down to gear 1.
Okay.
Which means the load is already pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
Now your question is, can you go below this?
Yeah.
Right? Because that's one of the levels we would like to attack. The moment you're at this level, clearly your working sets are also small.
The load is small.
The load is small. The working sets need not be small. Okay. Sorry. So So now the point is that you're clearly working within a bank. Now the ideas are going to be somewhat similar to what we did over there. The working set is going to get distributed in such a way that
so all the working sets need to be available in that first bank.
Correct.
And the number of replicas of each working set should be proportional to the load on.
It's the same old algorithm again, whatever that algorithm. So it may be that volume 1 will have 7 copies, volume 2 will have 1 copy, 3 will have 14 copies, etc. But whatever it is, they're going to be all over the place here. And you can use whatever scheme. Let's just say for now that it's your SRC map scheme. But you're going to assume that this is your work, and you will apply the algorithm.
Okay. But
now the good thing is that you can achieve gear ratios that are smaller than 1.
For that, we have to control the footprint of the working set, right? So we need some sort of partitioning of the servers.
You could do it that way, or you could do whatever you did over there.
No, but here we had partitioned the volumes. Here there is no partitioning of volumes, right?
Okay, so you're right. So you
need to partition the
servers.
You need
to partition the servers to say that working sets will. To say what?
So here we had the property that a working set was a resident in a volume, co-located in a volume. So I could actually combine the load of those two guys, the working set,
and assign
it to that volume.
Yeah.
If that volume had the IOPS capacity to support the working set and the original volume.
So yeah.
So here the problem.
I don't have the entire picture in my head, but my general thinking is that more or less whatever you do there, you need to do that here.
Yeah. So one thing which we could do is just split the servers here. Right.
Yes.
And we could assign working sets within each. So, for instance, if I need to keep this working set active, and this working set active, and this working set active, I could actually switch off these servers. Right.
Well, all working sets are going to be active, just that some of them.
Because each working set may have multiple copies.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah.
So some copies may actually be inactive and others may be active.
Correct, yeah. But I don't think you want working sets to be sort of localized, because there you are allowing working sets to go anywhere based on your algorithm.
Yeah, but I'm saying that the entire working set for one volume is located in this set of servers,
okay,
rather than spread through all of these sets.
Fine, yeah, sure, absolutely.
Because if we want to keep that working set active, we might have to switch
or
on everything.
Maybe it's more convenient to think that this is just a collection of volumes, and so each of these volumes now reflects that same picture.
That's what I was thinking originally.
Which is
this guy, right?
Then each of these has some scratch space, which can be used to store working sets.
Yeah.
And now this has a collection of working sets, this has another collection of working sets, and so on, based on whatever scheme we come up with. So now we have reduced this problem to that problem.
Yeah. So that's basically what I was going with this.
Sure. Yeah.
But I like the previous version where in one respect, which is the load balancing respect, because you don't have to partition the server into volumes. All the volumes are spread across this entire set of nodes. So each volume actually has greater IOPS capacity in this merged configuration for the original replicas, the primaries, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, each volume IOPS capacity is restricted to these servers.
Yes.
So, if we can sort of develop a way to keep the footprint of the original primary large for load balancing purposes, but the working set footprint smaller, doing something like this, seems like a good idea.
Maybe then I don't understand. So, here, a working set is either completely here or not.
It is completely there.
If it's chosen to be put on this node, then the complete version is going to be there.
Yeah.
Now, are you saying that you want to break that down?
No, the working set still stays co-located.
Yeah.
But the original volumes are spread out.
Right. So in fact, the picture I have in my head, I'm ignoring this more or less, or using it in the same way it was used over there. Namely, each volume has a parent, parent disk, so to speak.
Yeah.
Where it's going to be present, and if that may be active or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The primary is, in this case, so...
No, the primary you are using for once you've decided where all the copies are, one of those is going to be a primary. That's what you mean by primary, right? If a working
no,
set
that's
is...
an active... I mean, in SRC map terminology, it's an active replica. It's a replica that's chosen
then
to be activated.
You should check my... Because the notation I used was slightly different... Because I used active to mean that it has not been
turned on.
Or
yeah, that's
on
right.
So active is for the physical volumes.
Yes.
Whereas now we are talking about the copies of the working set, which may be, let's say a copy of a working set may be here, and here. Some of these machines have been active, the others have been shut down,
mm-hmm.
which means that for this particular guy, there are now only two copies that are active.
And one of them.
Among these, you'll choose one of them as the primary.
Mm-hmm. Yes, active. We choose one of them as the active replica. In the SRC map terminology.
I thought you called it primary. Okay. So you need to go and fix my terminology.
Yeah, we'll do that at the end. Yeah, but this is tricky because, I mean, you capture these two parameters well in terms of the requirement for a large footprint because of load balancing and a smaller footprint to allow fine-grained power performance levels.
Right.
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 So, I mean, in some sense, maybe the full volume... copies can be spread out and have a larger footprint, whereas the working sets can have a smaller footprint. So we can think of it as a sort of two-layer approach to say that.
That's what I was saying earlier. That's correct.
For fine-grained energy proportionality,
yeah.
we can turn on and off working sets, whereas for coarse-grained energy proportionality, we can turn on and off original volumes. Because the original volumes will provide greater IOPS capacity.
So for the original data, you're going to have large footprints because we're going to allow it to spread out over an entire back, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's something
we can
think about. Right now, the way I've written it is not the case.
Not the case. You,
yeah.
you called it, you partitioned
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The part,
at least the way I'm thinking, is that fine if the original copies are spread out all over the place, but if you keep the working set with a small footprint, then you're almost there.
Yeah, that's true. The thing is
that the load will kick in, and
there is one issue that we are sort of ignoring, because we are assuming that the working sets are going to be stable.
Uh-huh.
One of the ideas we used here is that if the working set is not stable, you keep the original
data
active. And if we need to go with
that's
that,
going to be true. Yeah. Then you have
then we have to turn on an entire bank for that guy. That's the.
But that's probably too severe a constraint, saying that even when the working set is not stable, that you have to have this kind of performance guarantees. Sounds a bit severe.
You mean that's unachievable? It's not achievable.
We aren't there yet, my point. I think that if you are able to do this for stable conditions, then we can start to think about other situations.
Right, but...
Then we have to kind of slowly start to crank up the thing, where you say, okay, at the end of every, what did you call it, consolidation time period, then things change. Now, how do we handle the situation? If you assume it to start changing arbitrarily, then I think that would be
the problem
with too difficult an online problem. I think it's already very, very complicated.
It is from an algorithmic standpoint, it is getting complex, but from a practical standpoint, assuming that
but
we
I
have
thought
stable
even
working
with the practical considerations, I thought you were only messing around with it every 2 hours.
That's the whole point. I mean, we would not like to mess around with it at a smaller granularity because of reliability concerns, because you cannot switch on and off this more frequently than that, right? And for that reason, so that we are able to maintain that 2 hour granularity, we have to go with the fact that
load might be unstable and that
working sets might be unstable, and therefore we might have to keep the original data active so that we do not incur.
What about load? Load also you're going to assume can vary a lot within a 2 hour period, or that.
So we are assuming, first of all, we are assuming that the load is going to be fairly stable, but then there can be bursts. There can be bursts within a consolidation interval. So so I talk about how we can handle that in the proposal. I don't know if you got a chance to read that. So what I'm basically saying is that if we see a burst, assuming that these bursts are infrequent, then we can completely abandon energy proportionality and all the within a single consolidation interval to say that active disks are always active and idle and standby are always standby. We can say that because there is a burst, I'm going to convert all the standbys to active for the time that the burst exists. And then once the burst no longer there, we can go back to this. So in that way, we provide the performance that is required. While at the same time, when the load is high, while at the same time when the load is low, we can still do energy proportionality.
So if in every 2 hour period you have burst, then you're screwed. Then you're
screwed. Yeah, yeah. But the thing is that bursts do not occur that frequently. They occur maybe once in a blue moon, because
bursts by definition are not predictable.
Bursts by definition are not predictable exactly. But I do say that, okay, there are some bursts which are predictable because they happen every,
for instance, in the evening.
Midnight, when people are doing backup, when you're reading everything all the time, you're going to have a burst, right? So, but those are predictable bursts, and we can deal with that. But there are unpredictable bursts because suddenly Apple started selling this new computer and everyone, goes to apple.com to look at it, right? That's an unpredicted burst. I mean, you can, of course, predict it because the people who change the website might say that, okay, well, you have to be careful because there might be a burst. But those sort of fine-grained communication cannot occur.
Right. So where are we?
So I think what we can say is that we can, first of all, we need to formalize this stuff. I think this is good, right? And to at least give the reader a sense that we understand
The main issues.
Mm-hmm. And then say, okay, this is one possibility that we can have three banks and have no restriction on where volume chunks can go within a single bank, right? And then these are the good things about it. That, well, I have coarse-grained, power proportionality at the basic volume replication, whereas fine-grained at the working set level, and for do that,
all of this. All of this doesn't talk about BERTs yet. It's just talking about...
Right, but BERTs we can handle in an orthogonal way, right? We can say that if there is a burst and we see response, we just abandon everything and go into this fail-safe mode or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then wait for things to stabilize and then afterwards go back to this stuff. Right.
Okay.
And the burstiness is more in terms of IO ops than in terms of changes in the workload. There are two distinct things that I talk about in the proposal.
Say the sentence again.
So the burstiness is orthogonal to rapid shifts in workload. So I actually talk about two of these challenges in 4.5. So the first is what mechanisms can be employed to control the impact to the IO performance during dynamic workload or working shift shifts, working set shifts. So if I had a certain vision or a certain idea of a working set, but suddenly that changed. It changed drastically. Then the system is going to have a problem dealing with it. All the performance values are going to be messed up, especially if the original volume is actually in standby mode and we are running off of a working set, right? The working set is not really the working set anymore. So we have a whole bunch of read misses going to the primary, which is in standby mode. And because we require that during the two-hour interval, a machine and disk in standby should stay in standby mode, we have a problem with the performance. So I say if there is a drastic working set shift, we can see that because by looking at the number of read misses.
Yes.
And then we say, okay, if that is the case, then once again, I'm going to just switch on the primary because I don't want to deal with the performance.
Right.
Impact of that. So that's one exception issue. The other one is a burst in terms of increased IOPS requirement all of a sudden. Right. And once again, we say that, okay, there is a peak in the middle of a consolidation interval, so I'm going to abandon the consolidation interval boundary, and I'm going to switch disk into active state right away. And the argument is that we don't do that every consolidation interval. If we are doing that every consolidation interval or multiple times in each consolidation interval, then we have a reliability issue.
Okay.
So that's the next research challenge. So to say what mechanisms can be employed to control the impact of IO bursts to IO performance in a consolidation.
Okay.
Yeah. But these are sort of separately handled.
Okay. Alright. So now question is how to formalize this. Well, one way to do this, which is what I was trying to say earlier, is to use this gear ratio type argument, saying that, let's say you allow R copies of the original data, of the full volumes, then achieving these gear ratios of 0, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3 up to R is possible, essentially by using Microsoft's ideas, roughly speaking. Even if we fine-tune some things, just the mere fact that you have banks is enough to guarantee this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then, if you want anything more fine-grained than that, then you have to come up with fresh ideas too, because typically R is 3, and so the best you can do with this is 33% in terms of whatever that factor is called. So now you want gear ratios that are smaller than 100. And the question is, how do you achieve this? So now we are clearly talking about load. Loads
that are either lower than 33% or somewhere between 33 and 66 or between 66.
For instance.
and 100.
Right. Well, if you're already up in 33%,
you're probably
going to 66% doesn't hurt you so much because you're, well,
not really. So, but you can do the following. If you're at, let's say, 40, right? So you can keep this whole thing active to get 33.
Yeah.
And within the first one, you can
try and
you can
figure
do
out how to get this. Yeah. So that's the way I would like to push this.
Mm-hmm.
That way, say that we are doing one better than what Microsoft is able to achieve because they can only do these. They can only do performance ratios that are 1 over R, where R is your replication ratio.
So the question is then within...
That's the granularity of their what is that called? Performance, a gear ratio. I have to go and look up the terminology. I'm sorry, I can't keep them in my head.
No, that's okay. Neither do I know.
So maybe you can just call that gear ratio.
Yeah.
So if you're allowing R copies, then the best you can do is G over R for whatever G you want. G equals 1, 2, 3.
A G over R. We call it power performance levels.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Fine.
Because you get a certain performance and at a certain level.
So this is roughly the best you can do with the planning with the scheme that they have.
Mm-hmm.
By getting into working sets, you can achieve
more fine grained. That's right. Yeah.
So that's the pitch that we should go for.
Mm-hmm. So now, okay, let's say we are going for that pitch. I think that's maybe easier to describe than the one that I have right now.
Well, you know, what you've described can still be there, but I'm saying if you want to motivate, sort of give the big picture of what you want, what you're achieving. This might be a good way to do it.
Well, what I have is the partitioned stuff, which means within each bank, I'm going to separate out the chunks of different volumes and different servers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now,
which is fine. I think that it still achieves a finer grain performance level within that.
It does, but the load balancing is bad. The load balancing is bad because if you need one volume, you're restricted to fewer sets of disks than what you have. So maybe we can talk about both.
Yeah.
If we have the space and the support.
Here's one possibility. And
along the Microsoft direction.
Yeah.
And then here's a new direction completely.
Say that these are all, these are questions that we want to pursue and sort of leave it there.
Yeah. Now, for the fine grain, do you think, like, sort of partitioning this way to put working sets within each bin makes sense so that we can get the fine grain?
To me, it doesn't. I mean, I'm still kind of in favor of the other model, which says, okay, if I have a working set, if I want to make an extra copy, I'll find the first of the, I'll use some global scheme for locating it within this bank.
Right, but the problem is that there are maybe, I mean, I can say that maybe there are 100,000 servers in this bank.
Uh-huh, I see. Okay.
Right.
Okay, so, well, I don't have a sense of these sizes, so go ahead, tell me.
So if there are 100,000 servers here, 100,000 servers here, 100,000
And the chunks
here,
are going to be in millions, presumably.
Chunks are going to be, probably millions.
Yeah.
But the point is that I need to co-locate the working set in a small footprint of those 100,000 servers.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If I don't have a plan for that, it will be all over the place.
Yeah.
Because
the
working set itself might have 10,000 chunks.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
So the question is, how do we confine it?
So it means it's possible to sort of modify the previous algorithm for that. Maybe you don't need to really. So, for instance, you know, that earlier algorithm, I mean, I still have a lot of questions about it. Because remember, you showed me this picture where you have a bunch of these, I guess you called it virtual.
Virtual disks.
Virtual disks, and here are physical disks.
Yeah.
These are sorted according to the criteria that you have. However, I'm still not convinced why you need to sort this. That part I've not really understood at all. For me, it seems like, how does it matter where I put it?
The reason for putting it in the right place is because you want to do a matching of a working set with the volume that go together. So for instance, if I want to keep certain working sets active and certain original volumes active, then they need to be in the same place. Otherwise, I'll need to keep everything active.
Well, you know, each volume will have a whole bunch of working sets. Each of these guys has a whole bunch of working sets. Now the question is, you know, what subset covers everything? That's really what you're trying to figure out.
Well, each volume has a working set, has one working set. I mean, are you talking about physical disk?
On the physical disk, I have the original data.
Yeah, and I have multiple
and
working
I have,
sets.
I have multiple working sets.
Yes.
Right. So let's ignore the original data for now.
No, that's the key. That is actually the key behind this guy, right? That the original data is co-located with working sets that put when they are both activated actually serve a very special purpose. Because the original data is very likely to be kept active because of its characteristics. And therefore, we want to put working sets of those guys that are going to be, are more likely to be idle in the same place as the, so you want to do a matching, you know, a matching of the working sets of volumes that are more likely to be idle with the original data of volumes that are less likely to be active. So when you put them together and you switch on this physical volume, you have everything. The idea there is that the original data actually serves a purpose because it provides IOPS, it provides the data for that original volume, and we are not serving that data from a working set. We are serving it from
the original data.
Because maybe there are large number of read matrices, it's unstable.
Yeah.
Because it's a really large working set, you know.
Because it has a bad score.
Yeah.
That's roughly.
Exactly.
Yeah. But still, you know, your algorithms seem to have the same sorted order for both of them. And based on what you're telling me now, it seems that the criteria is actually different.
That's true. The reason the matching is set up the way it was is to satisfy this ordering property, which in fact is not as important as doing the best match.
Right. And to me, I still don't have a feel for the ordering property. I don't know what it buys you. Other than the algorithm, other than sort of the operation of the algorithm.
So I agree. I think one of the things that we need to somehow state in the proposal is that the algorithms that we have developed may not necessarily be the optimal in terms of energy efficiency. They buy this ordering property, but that's not necessarily the best situation for energy efficiency. And we actually looked at an example, if you remember, during one of our previous discussions, and we saw that
didn't really do so well in that example,
because it kept three disks active instead of two or what, something like that.
Well, I mean, all these ideas seem to suggest that we should just use the same scheme here within the bank.
You mean the partition placement? Partitioned volume?
It doesn't have to be partitioned, but here you're roughly partitioning it in the sense you are doing some matching.
Yeah, it's already partitioned, right? It's partitioned for you like this. Whereas in this case, it's, by default, it's smart. We had to artificially partition it. That's why I sort of came up with this stuff. But then it has poor load balancing properties if we do this partitioning. So I also like this sort of this two-layer approach to use banking and the original data for getting the coarse-grained energy levels and using working sets to get the fine-grained energy levels, because we want
that's how I've been thinking about
for the fine-grained energy levels. We need to do coordinating
to do something,
so that the working sets are are sort of constrained in smaller footprints.
Yeah. Okay. So the way you had it written up, you were a bit strict about where you were placing them, this partition. So I'm suggesting making that a little bit loose.
I sort of relaxed it a little bit and said that some volumes can be sharing servers.
Yeah, okay. You already did that.
Yeah, I did that. So because that will allow better load balancing.
Yeah. So that part really needs to be kind of thought through again. But essentially, this algorithm will work regardless of whether we do this partitioning or not, is it?
Which one? This one?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't work if it's not partitioned. Because there is a matching aspect of working sets to the original data.
Well, the only aspect you really use is the load that's on this original data. So that could be whatever it is.
Yeah.
Sitting on that particular disk, isn't it?
Yes, we're using the fact that the working set is really no good for that original data.
But for whatever collection of chunks that are sitting on this as original data, if it has high load, then
it's not just about the load, right? It's about the stability as well.
Sure. No, I mean, I'm saying if it has all the properties that you talked about over there in terms of a single volume, then you can apply the same algorithm. In the sense, you're going to match that with a whole bunch of other working sets.
But the original data, the working sets are for
volumes, is it?
The working sets are for volumes. The original data is spread across the entire bank.
Correct. Yeah, that's fine.
So
original data for a volume.
For a single volume spread across the entire.
So now I'm saying forget about that and just look at a single node, look at the chunks that are sitting on it, and then decide whether it's load is high or not. Is it load or is it?
I think we are talking more about stability here.
Okay.
Because the reason to keep this data volume active.
Mm-hmm.
Is because the working sets cannot actually capture the access to that volume. Therefore, you need to keep that guy active. Otherwise, the impact to performance would be huge.
Okay.
Right? And therefore, we want to keep this guy active.
Yeah.
In this case, if that same criteria holds that we want to keep this guy active, we need to turn on the entire bank.
Yeah, I have to say, I haven't understood the other paper well enough to argue this. But it looks like once again you are arguing why this sorted order and this sorted order are need different criteria.
That's true. I mean,
the algorithm as presented seems like you are using the same sorted order, right? Isn't that true?
We are, yes. And in fact, the reviewers asked exactly the same question: why aren't you matching this guy with this guy, and rather matching these two guys? Because
So it's just that the criteria are different. It's not just the reverse sorted order, in my opinion. It's based on what you just told me. No,
the reverse sorted order would actually make sense because the reverse sorted order would then result in.
Because here you said it's the stability of the working set. That's much more important. Here you said it's load and size of the working set or something like that.
Yeah. Well, all the factors are in combination, but some factors are more important for this order than the other factors.
That is my point.
It's a little bit more
so maybe
murky than
different scoring scheme.
I think that would actually be a good follow-up on that original idea.
In fact, we can write a few lines there saying that at least our analysis suggests that the ordering should be different because here you're more the more important significant factors are such and such.
I agree if we can. The biggest problem I have right now is I cannot expect the people who are reading the proposal to have read that paper. So
No, but you can say in abstract manner that here the volumes are considered in a sorted order. The volumes that are high on the list have high loads and high what's the other thing?
High instability.
No, so here the instability comes in. Here it's high load and large sizes.
Mm. Yeah.
Whereas here it's the more significant factor is how unstable it is.
Right.
So based on this sorting order, we do some matching.
That's true.
And so our new or a proposed algorithm is where we sort it in this manner, and then go through a matching.
Simple matching, simpler matching mechanism.
Right.
Yeah, the that's why I'm going to struggle with section 3 because
I think
paper.
I mean, it's not coming to me naturally, but it may be possible to explain all of this intuitively. It's really not may not be that bad.
And I'm now afraid in terms of the coherence of the proposal, because I think that, and specifically because some of the stuff that we've been talking about assumes, you know, implicitly assumes knowledge of the other paper. I hope those guys read the other paper because it's going to be published by the time this gets reviewed, and it's going to be published in FAST. And I read all the papers that come out in FAST. And so the real question is, are the guys who are going to review this proposal and from the storage community or not? If they are, then it is likely that they've read the paper so they can understand this discussion better. But if not, then they'll be completely lost, or at least somewhat lost, and might hate this proposal. So, I mean, Thursday I want to dedicate completely
to... Well, maybe it's good that I have not read the paper so much.
That's in a way true.
Maybe I can look at it as a... if I understand it, then your average illiterate reviewer will probably do as well.
No, I think, I mean, in fact... I assume that a lot of the FAST audience will not understand the algorithmic aspects of that work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even for me to understand it, it took a fair amount of time. Because intuitively, I'm not used to reading algorithms.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't understand them that easily. I have to spend more time than an algorithm person. And the people in that community are not algorithm people by large. So, yeah, but I'm sure they appreciate it. They may not understand it, but they probably appreciate it, right? So,
all right, so what do you suggest?
So I suggest that we talk about these two different directions. One, more addressing load balancing with this multi-geared and multi-two-level approach, and the other, addressing the more fine-grained energy proportionality in along the lines of this guy.
Yeah.
So we can map this problem onto that problem and use somewhat similar techniques. So I can talk about both approaches.
I think you should talk a little bit about the possibilities for an improved algorithm.
For this,
Where. You can say that you can think of this as a matching problem where you have sort of virtual disks and their working sets on one side and the physical volumes on the other side, and where you sort these according to a scoring mechanism that takes into account such and such, and these are again sorted according to scoring mechanisms that takes into account such and such, and that we are considering algorithms of this nature. This type.
So my goal is to work on section 3 so I can at least get a sense of is the background that's available in section 3 so that, you know, we know what is the level of detail we can talk about things like this. And because in section 3, I want to give the readers a glimpse into what we have in this paper.
Mm-hmm.
And the problems that we looked at in this paper, right? And the direction that we took. The problem is that we don't have much space. And so I don't know how much I can talk about
right.
in section 3.
So here formalizing is going to be quite discussing.
So you mean here? You mean in this?
What if we
formalize this guy instead? Can we formalize this where we just have everything partitioned and look at this version of the problem with 3? That might be easier.
Well, then you're committing to a
yeah,
model.
Yeah.
And
yeah, but if we say that we have both models, then we formalize both models separately.
Let me think about it. So we still want to consider the data and the working sets as two different entities that are going to be placed on these.
I think that's sort of
that's
basic.
Necessary.
Yeah.
And under what conditions do you only have to deal with working set and not the original data? Is this when the working set is fairly stable, something like that?
Then, first of all, the working set is stable, and second,
it's small, is it?
The IO ops, the load on the system is really small. So just turning on the disk width, which contain the working sets, is good enough to serve
the
load.
If the working set is stable,
mm.
even if the load goes up, you just make copies and you're fine, right?
You can still run off working sets. Then you have to activate multiple working sets.
Yeah.
That is something that we don't do in this approach. We don't activate multiple, we don't have multiple active replicas, which is something which we can do in this case also to adapt to load better.
So there you only have one active replica, so what happens if the load goes up?
So that's something we don't address in this work.
So those are points that really need to go in the proposal, because you really need to say what are the limitations of that work, because otherwise people are going to say you've done a lot over there.
Mm.
You really need to say that was just a first step.
Mm.
Don't think of that as.
Yeah, no, I have it as one of my reminders to address that. Yeah, but if I can talk about specifics, like what
so
I
then maybe then, even the original problem should be thought of as completely as an online problem where you have original data.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, let's call it D1 through DN, and your working set W1 through WN.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to assign them to various nodes. Well, these are already in place. There's no question about it. Now you want to know sort of you have a current state. You want to know which a copy of which working set should be placed where next, or the copy of which working set should be removed from some node, or which node should be made active or not or inactive. These are sort of our four events.
Yeah.
So you can think of this as a completely online system where these four events happen, and you just have to provide conditions under which you make a decision.
Mm. That's certainly one of the next directions that we could go. To say that we're going to make additional copies of working sets as required and remove old copies of other working sets.
Yeah.
And we could do that.
But isn't that, I mean, that is what you're using here, right?
Mm-hmm. But here we are sort of assuming that the workload intensities across each volume are somewhat stable.
Even if they are stable, the question is you have configured the system at a given point in a certain manner.
Mm.
You want to know is it profitable for you to make an extra copy of working set number 17 and put it on process on whatever client number 32. If it is, that's something you should do.
Mm.
Or should you turn on number 43? So these can, I assume these can go on even during your consolidation period, right? In which case your consolidation period maybe is not so meaningful anymore, and maybe your decisions are just happening all the time.
So the consolidation interval is important because load can change at that granularity, right?
Fine.
Because if the load increases, you have to turn on some more disks.
But if it is very adaptive, it's going to sense these things happening.
Yeah.
And so maybe it can do, if let's say the gap between how it's currently doing versus how well it can do is so large, then maybe you have to make some drastic changes to the system.
Like creating another replica of the work of specific working sets.
Well, that's part of the events that I'm considering here.
Yeah, so the thing is
so
that
maybe something more like turning on an entire bank or something like that.
Oh, in this specific
in this scenario, but I don't know what the equivalent
in the original problem
would be.
In the original problem, there is no multiple replication line. There is no three-way replica.
No, there is not. But still, you can still have banks. You can still say, okay, I'm going to just turn on a whole bunch of machines and get the system a little more stable. Making more things active can definitely help the state of the system.
Yes.
If there is any burst, right?
Yeah. That's true. Okay. See, yeah, it's sort of getting overwhelming because there are. It's a really interesting area, right?
So perhaps do you see this as worth it? Should I try and write up a completely online system of this kind?
I guess it might be a better idea for you to focus on the replicated.
No, because if I do this, then that same thing would work over here too, because it's just that now you have three copies or some number of copies of the data, and the rest is the same, and you're still asking the same similar questions.
Yeah. So in an all
additional properties that this satisfies. That's all.
The only thing that we have to be careful about, though, is that the working sets can be large, and therefore we cannot create replicas too frequently.
Fine.
Right?
So, but the algorithm should be sensitive to all of that. It's going to say if WI is too large, don't even consider. That's not going to be. That action is going to have a low score, and it won't do it.
And the other thing is that we are assuming that all the free space is used already with the original replicas of the working set,
which means
that we need to get rid of something to put something new in there.
So it's
more of a online replacement algorithm than matching algorithm.
Sure. So every incremental step is, I can think I should probably write it up that way, where it says this one replaces one or more working sets on this particular processor.
Yeah, that's the online, that's the problem phi that you're talking about.
Yeah.
When the properties are changing.
Right. Yeah. But I think it would help to sort of formalize this over there.
I think it would be good. I don't know how it applies to this other guy, though.
Well, I'm saying that it's the only thing that's different is that instead of just D1 through DN, you have R copies of D1, R copies of D2. So your original data has more copies.
Yeah, but the D1 to DN are all
they're
merged.
Not on the,
they're all merged
they're
together.
Not on the same.
If we do not assume the partitioned volume placement.
That's true. So.
So in one case, with the partition volume placement, you're right that there are sort of D1 1, D1 2, D1 3, right? If we assume the partition volume placement.
Well, then what I'm going to suggest is that you take this entire space and chop it into chunks, and now you work with chunks instead.
Right, like this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, because then the footprint of the working set will be within one chunk rather than spread across the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the right. That seems like a reasonable approach.
Except that here there are multiple copies of each chunk. That's all.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's similar to what happened over there.
Yeah. Instead of calling this a chunk, let's call it a group, because it's a group of servers, right?
Okay. that what you're saying?
Are you talking about the chunk in the traditional?
Well, no. For me, it's just a piece of, it's a unit of placement on your physical volumes.
Okay.
Whatever it is. So
okay.
If you want to stick
it's
to
a group of, it's probably going to be a group of servers. Group of servers. Because each working set will go to more than, you know, several servers. On disks on several servers. Because remember that...
Remember, this is a unit of placement.
Yeah.
Which means this entire piece will be on one of your nodes.
Oh, I see. So then this is a chunk of the on the traditional...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I'm saying,
maybe I didn't
you know, whatever data you have, original data I have, just think of all of that as just one big memory space.
Mm-hmm.
Break it into chunks. Each chunk gets placed on some node.
Mm-hmm. So I don't have like W1 through WN.
I will still have W1 through WN. Some of the working sets may be empty.
But you're combining the original data ones into one.
So the working set has to go with a node. Right. So.
Or a set of nodes.
Or
a group. It's more likely to be a group of nodes.
Is it?
Yeah. So to take an example, let's say that a volume is 10 terabytes. And a working set is 1 terabyte. It's a 10% working set.
Mm-hmm.
And the 1 terabyte is going to be spread across 100 servers,
mm-hmm.
each of which has a certain small amount of free space to store a very small fraction of that working set.
Okay.
Right. So now the question is, how do I restrict this 1 terabyte to a set of servers? I could either store it on 100 servers or I could store it on 10 servers.
Yeah.
So I just sort of reduce the footprint of that working set on fewer servers, which is what we're doing here. So here, if all of these are 100 servers, then each group is 10 servers.
Yeah.
So I'm putting one working set in a group of 10 servers.
Right.
Because if I want to then switch that working set on, I just need to switch on these 10 servers and I have the working set.
Okay. Let me think about it some more. I think I may have to.
Well, you need to go.
We have some more minutes. Better to walk all the way to the other.
Why don't you go and